Good morning, everyone. That song is one of my favorites. I wish I could sing that last line perfectly and say, now I know. It's totally there. It's really kind of a humbling thing to sing that last line, knowing that that's what you want and knowing that you never really quite make that. He is worthy of that. Number 699, I'll be a friend to Jesus. The second line, the world may turn against him. I'll love him to the end. And I believe that we can say that very sincerely as Christians. And yet I look at Peter and I look at all the apostles, having spent all that time with Jesus, having seen his love and his compassion and all the wonderful things that he did and said. And yet still, he told them, this night you'll fall away. And they just could not believe that. And I think with all sincerity, but it's really humbling to understand that our faith can be that fragile. And I want to talk to you about somebody in Scripture that I believe is an incredible example of staying strong. And I hope it's an encouragement to you. This is I wasn't planning on doing this lesson for this morning, but I was working on this lately. And, you know, whatever you're working on over the last few weeks tends to be what you think about and focus on. And so I changed the lesson in the last week and a half, which is typical. By the way, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I am very thankful that you all are supporting me now in this work. And I also thank you for the love you've shown my daughter and my new son-in-law. And it's nice to be able to see some of the faces of the men that I haven't seen in a while. And I just really hope this lesson is something that will be an encouragement to you. I want to talk about the life of Joseph, one of my favorite characters in the Bible. I understand a lot of people feel that way about him. But Joseph was really an amazing person when you look at his life. And you see, growing up, that he must have known about his father Jacob and the things that his father went through. His father did a lot of ugly things when he was early on. He got cheated by Laban a lot. He didn't know what was going to happen, whether his brother was going to kill him. He comes back to the land and everything works out. He must have known about the promises God made to him and how God was with him and kept him in these promises. He must have known about Isaac and Abraham and Abraham's challenge to sacrifice his son Isaac and how that all worked out. He most likely knew about the flood and God's hatred of sin and the wrath that he brought upon the nation and going back to Adam and Eve. He must have understood those stories. But a lot of people didn't pay any attention to them. A lot of people didn't live according to who God had revealed himself to be. And in Genesis 37, we see Joseph is now a young man. He's 17 years old. And I'm not going to go through a lot of the details. I'm assuming most of you know the story of Joseph. And I'm going to talk enough about it so you're reminded of the story, but I'm not going to read too much of it because I want to hit upon some points in the story that oftentimes, it's what the Bible doesn't say, but it's clearly there in the context that we know certain things were going on as we read a verse. And so in Genesis 37, we see Joseph is a young man, 17 years old. It mentions that he had brought back a bad report about his brothers. It talks about his favoritism that the father has put upon him. There was a lot of family dysfunction going on. There were four wives, two of them slave wives. There was all sorts of competition between Rachel and Leah, and that must have spilled over to the children. And, matter of fact, we can see that a lot of that did spill over to the children. Matter of fact, even verse 2, it says, Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. That, again, just sort of, they're not just brothers. It's along with those other ones. There's this total dysfunction in this family. And Joseph is the father's favorite son. And he's a young man of beautiful form and appearance. And you could understand where he could maybe get a very swelled head. And the brothers hated him. And we see that he has these dreams. And these dreams essentially was telling him and his family, oh, you're going to rule over us. You think you're going to rule over us? Joseph must have kept those dreams in mind. The father kept the dreams in mind. And the brothers hated him even more for these dreams. Matter of fact, the brothers became so jealous, we understand, that they wanted to kill him. And so one day when he's approaching and it's far away from dad, they decide, let's kill him. And, you know, of course, men choose what they're going to do, and God places other options before them. Well, they ended up, instead of killing him, they sold him to Ishmaelite traders as a slave. Imagine a young man who's been in that kind of position of probably pampered son and in a position of great respect in the, at least in the father's eyes, and therefore having that position before the father and in this wealthy family, and now he's a slave. He's being taken off to some, probably Egypt. That's as they were on their way to Egypt. He was on his way somewhere, and he would be sold as a slave. And you can imagine, that's not just a short trip. That was a long, devastating trip, not only to know where he's headed, but what had just happened to him. Not that one brother did something to them, but they conspired openly together to destroy their brother, wanting to kill him and then sell him ultimately as a slave, as if that was better. And you can imagine a young man, no matter what kind of upbringing he had, no matter what faith he had, to be separated like his from his father and his family, maybe not from his brothers, that might not have been the end of the world, but to be separated from his father and all that went with that would have been a devastating thing for most people. The bitterness, the anger, the confusion, the hurt, all these things would have been a huge problem. And Joseph ends up now a slave in Egypt. He could have been a slave that was basically doing menial work, hard labor that would have killed him within the space of a year or two. He could have been somebody who was beaten every day, that his life was just one long suffering. And I can imagine when the brothers, they went to Egypt, they thought he was either dead or they were going to look for him in the gutter somewhere. They certainly weren't looking for him in the palaces. But that was the life that he was facing. And he finds himself in the household of a man named Potiphar, who's a very high up official, an officer, chief of the guard, captain of the guard. And Potiphar started recognizing, this wouldn't have been the first week or the first month, but he started recognizing that this man had ability. And this man, whatever he did, was blessed. And so Potiphar kept on putting him in higher and higher positions until he was finally over all his household. And I don't think that happened over the space of 6 months or a year. But this man, Joseph, is now taking something very bad that happened to him, and he's managing to work and do wonderful things and give himself a new position, which he's still a slave. It's still a very difficult place to be in, but he's able to make the best of it. But, you know, somebody in that kind of position would start maybe trusting their own talents, that I'm succeeding because of who I am and what I've done, and I'm making this work, and I'm going to be a success. And forgetting that, as the passage says, and God was with him. God was with him. But, of course, if Joseph was having those other ideas, God would not have been with him. And if Joseph was having those other ideas about this pride and how can I use this position for my benefit and still having bitterness and anger in his life, you would see very different actions leaking out of his character. So we know that this young man must have retained his faith in God. Even though it doesn't tell us, we know God was with him, and we see that he must have continued trusting in his God even after having been separated from his father. His brothers having hated him, he's now a slave. He's a slave. Yes, he's got a good position, but he's still in a really, really difficult situation. Is he thankful for the things that he does have, or is he just focusing on all the things he lost? That's a very easy thing to do, isn't it? Joseph still has a lot, but he could be focusing on all the things that he's lost. Well, he builds himself back up, and we know the story. The wife of Potiphar starts propositioning him. And we see Joseph very immediately in Genesis 39, verses 7 to 9. He responds powerfully. In Genesis 39, verse 7. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" Now we see not only a glimpse into Joseph's mind, but we see that he has a great faith in God. And he has a great fear and respect for doing what is right in the sight of God. And I think that if we were in that kind of situation, we might be able to say the same kind of thing. No, this is wrong. Sort of like Peter, I can imagine, when he says, "I will never deny you." In that moment, you can stand up and say, "No, I know what is right, and I will not do it." But that's not what happened to Joseph, is it? That's not the end of the story. We see in the next verses, when she says, when he rejects her, verse 10, "It came about as she spoke to Joseph day after day." See, that's really the hard part, isn't it? It's that long process of struggle. That he did not listen to her, to lie beside her, or be with her. Now it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household was there inside. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." Now this was not, again, this was not the first or second or third time. She had been tempting him for a very long time. And you can imagine people might, no. And then eventually it comes around to, okay, this is going to be a weakening of our resolve. And we're going to, and again, depends on how we're thinking. And this is really what I want to get to today is that if Joseph had had a mind where he allows other thoughts to creep in, it would have weakened him. He would have still said no, but there would have come that day where he would have given in because his thinking has been very different. And that's what I want to ask is what kind of a mindset would we have had after months and months? And we don't know how long this was, but we understand that there was a lot of temptations, probably even threats on her part, that if he didn't go along with this, that something could happen to him or that she would lie to her husband. Because obviously she was very capable of lying to her husband. And she was probably very arrogant and upset and bothered that he was not accepting her advances. So, I think in our lives we tend to be very good at rationalizing. Anything that happens, we find ways to change it around if it makes it our lives easier. And certainly Joseph could have been a person that would have rationalized. And he could have said, I don't deserve slavery. This master is getting all the benefits of my work. What have I gotten out of it? After all, she is the master's wife, and you have to respect the master's wife. And if she tells you to do something, you're expected to go do whatever it is. So if she tells me to lie with her, well, then who am I? I'm just a servant. You could rationalize it in many different ways. I'm very important to my master. And even if he found out, I'm too important to him for him to do anything about it. There's all sorts of things that people can say. And matter of fact, if I asked you, what do you think some of the things that Joseph could have thought or said to rationalize the situation and maybe make it easier upon himself, that you could probably come up with a lot of different ideas because we're experts at it, really, at rationalizing and trying to basically justify our behavior or justify our struggles and giving into those struggles. I deserve just a little bit of comfort in my life. I've been suffering all this time. What's a little bit, it's not going to be that big of a deal. I do so much for my master, it's not really going to be that much of a problem. By the way, I don't want to get myself in trouble just for doing the right thing. That doesn't make any sense. I'm just going to do this. I'm going to go along with this. And, really, what does it matter? Well, we understand that he stood his ground even when she set it up where no one was around and she basically grabs him and corners him and he runs. And then she turns around and blames her husband and says, "That Hebrew who you brought into our home, he's making sport of me. He's done this to me." She lies to her husband. And I have to believe Potiphar probably knew that Joseph's character was a good character and he wouldn't have done this. And he probably knows his wife is probably very capable of doing something like what she did. And I think that if really Potiphar had believed his wife, that Joseph would have been dead. But he got thrown into prison. And think about that now. Joseph has done the right thing. He has stood his ground over months and months. We don't know how long it was, maybe years. He has done what was right. He has respected his master. He has respected God. And now he's not just a slave. He's a slave in prison. And in a very, very difficult situation. And again, this is not a prison like we have around here. This would be a very difficult place. Probably better than the commoner's prison in Egypt. But this was still a prison in that time. And they were stuck. He's stuck in there along with the others. And you can imagine how Joseph must feel at this point. And one of the things that might go through Joseph's mind, a lot of things would, but maybe the thoughts of Job's wife, you know. Are you still holding fast your integrity? What's the point of being faithful to this God if I'm now in this situation? Why should I bother continuing with this struggle day after day after day? It's just getting worse. I try to work hard. I try to trust in God. I try to do the right things. Things are getting better. And now it's 100 times worse. And that can wear on you and it can drag you down and it can get you bitter and angry. But that's not happening to Joseph. And it doesn't say, and Joseph didn't get angry, and Joseph didn't get bitter, and Joseph continued trusting in God. But we see that God continued to be with Joseph, which is an indicator that God was still pleased with Joseph. We also see the reaction of Joseph at different points. If Joseph had started entertaining those kinds of thoughts that we can entertain, he would not have stood against the temptations and the problems that came his way. He would not have withstood it. So he comes into the prison, the jail, and he is stuck there. And we don't know how long he was there after he left Potiphar's house. But we know that there was a 13-year period where he ended up being sold as a slave by his brothers to the point where he's standing before Pharaoh. We know there's 13 years. It's a very, very long time. And he was in a difficult situation for most of that time. And so in jail, he starts prospering. The jailer sees how well he's doing and how organized he is and how trustworthy he is. And he starts putting him entrusting the other prisoners to him. And so Joseph is doing okay for himself. Everything's going well. And then all of a sudden, you can use it since there's some guys here. You can imagine somebody like Joseph is saying, okay, I'm in prison, but he's found himself in a pretty good place. Sort of like being at Lodi, maybe as a facilitator or something. Not at a Columbia or some other place where you're just going to, it's a frightening place to be, and you're wondering if you're going to be stabbed in your sleep or something. This was a pretty good place, so at least he had it. But you know, a lot of guys who find themselves in those kinds of places, they say, how can I use that to my advantage? How can I take the position I've been given of trust and use it corruptly to benefit myself in other ways? A lot of people will think that way. They'll say, okay, I've earned this. It's not about God. It's not about humility and saying, I need to be thankful for what I have. It's about, okay, how can I take what I've been blessed with and then use it to get more out of it? Well, we don't see that happening with Joseph. Matter of fact, we even see when there were men, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker are thrown into the prison. These men were despondent, and Joseph seems to even have a concern for them. And they talk about their dreams, and Joseph interprets their dreams. And Joseph tells the cupbearer, you're going to be restored to your position of authority. But since you'll be before Pharaoh, please be kind and remember me. I'm an innocent man. Don't forget. Speak to him about my situation. And, of course, the baker was told he was going to be hung in 3 days, and he was. And so there is Joseph in prison. He's been there for a while now. And now he's got this slim little piece of hope that maybe that man will mention him to Pharaoh. And, you know, when people have only a little bit of hope, they're going to latch on to that hope. They're going to hold fast to that hope and think about it. And that's the only opportunity is that that man will go and speak to Pharaoh. But you know, going and speaking to a very powerful leader like that is not an easy thing, especially if you're somebody who was just, you know, almost killed by him. You probably don't want to raise your hand before the Pharaoh. You want to kind of stand in the background somewhere and be kind of unseen. But Joseph says, don't forget me. A week goes by. A month goes by. Okay, it's okay. He's going to find the right moment. He's going to find the right moment. 2 months goes by. Well, maybe he already did tell him. And maybe Pharaoh just rejected him offhand. But imagine how that would affect Joseph over months and months of having that hope that there's somebody finally who's going to plead my case, and that case will be answered, and I will be finally freed of this terrible situation. It's not happened. Day after day after week for 2 whole years, nothing. And we can just read it. It's 2 years. It's easy to read that. But when you're going through it every day, how are you thinking? Are you trusting in God? Are you saying, you know, I don't understand it, but somehow all of this is going to work out for the best? Is he getting bitter and angry at that man because he put his trust in the man? Maybe he should have recognized, and I believe he did, that maybe this was God's vehicle for blessing him. And that if this man's not going to be the vehicle, that God will use somebody else. But if he put his trust all in a man, he might be very disappointed, right? But that man, he doesn't know what happened. And as a matter of fact, that man never said anything. And for 2 years, nothing. That could create a lot of discouragement in people. A lot of despondency, a lot of bitterness, a lot of anger. And could have changed Joseph profoundly when he was in prison. But then we see that all of a sudden Pharaoh calls him. Because of the man saying, I remember he interpreted my dream, and Pharaoh has a dream. He once interpreted 2 dreams, actually, and he sends for him. And we see the coming days, months, and years of Joseph. Joseph displays great faith in God and great loyalty, great desire to help and serve others. And we see that all that happened in prison, all that happened in slavery, help prepare him for a position of great power and great authority, and also caused him to be a whole lot more compassionate to other people. That God was using his suffering to bring about great events later. Using evil of people and the heartlessness of others to bring about great things in Joseph. Joseph, while he was in prison, was given a great gift. Those two men had dreams. And those dreams came true. That would remind Joseph, if he had any sense at all, of the dreams he had when he was younger. That he would rule over his brothers. And if he understood that God had given him a dream of a future power where he would be a blessing to others, that would sustain him. I don't know what was sustaining Joseph, but it was obvious in his life in prison, he continued to trust in God. And I can't see why he would do that, except for he understood how great God was. And he understood how much his life depended upon submission to God. Because there was nothing else in his life that was really, matter of fact, it's even worse. It's one thing if you just go down and you just stay down there and you kind of learn to live with it and you suffer. But to go up and then to have such a great hope and then to be dropped down. And then to have another great hope, okay, now I finally got somebody who's close to Pharaoh, who's going to go in, and then to be brought low again, that can be devastating. And yet, Joseph didn't fail. Because his heart was devoted to God. He had that, he was walking with God. He was a man who, obviously, he had that trust and conviction that I need to be faithful to God no matter what happens in my life. With a lot of us, there'd be many times we would make excuses. We would have moments where we get very bitter, very angry. And I'm sure there must have been some of that in Joseph's life. I can't imagine a man not having some of that in his life. But if he had entertained those things, if he had let those things fester in his mind and think about it, when those other situations came along, it would have just brought despondency and bitterness and anger and rejection and wanting vengeance when if he ever got his hands on his brothers, he would surely want to destroy them. And if given the opportunity to kill them or to make them suffer like they made him suffer. But we don't see that with Joseph. We see a very different character where he then restores his brothers. And even after the father dies, now he's going to come after us. And even then, he says, no, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Joseph demonstrated that his thinking throughout all those years, he continued to put his trust in God. He continued to have a hope that somehow, somewhere, God would make this all work out. There's many times in our life where we don't see any solutions. We don't have any apparent hope. But if we have God, God has promised that he will be with us. He's promised that he'll be with us as we go through suffering. He doesn't promise we won't suffer. He doesn't promise that everything will be perfect. Matter of fact, the suffering helps build us. It helps discipline us. It challenges us. And it makes us useful for our master. And this is where I just want to kind of finish off with the point is that we really can't know the thoughts of Joseph throughout his life, but we can see the fruits of his life. And Jesus reminds us that we can know a man by his fruits. We can see what's coming out of the heart of Joseph. In Matthew 15, Matthew chapter 15, in verse 19, Jesus says, "For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. These are the things which defile the man. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile the man." It's the things that come out of the heart. All these things are coming out of the heart. And words and actions are a direct reflection of the heart. In Matthew 12, 33, Jesus says, "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit." We are either going to be a good tree with good fruit, or a bad tree with bad fruit. And if we are a good tree, it's because we're thinking thoughts of faithfulness and righteousness. We're respecting God. We're fearing God. We're trusting in God. And then there will come out of that tree good fruit. In 2 Peter 1, verse 8, after listing all these features and these characters of a godly life, he says in verse 8, "If these are yours and are increasing, they render you neither useless nor unfruitful in the true knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ." If we're increasing in these things, we will bear fruit for God. We will be useful to him. If we're thinking our own thoughts and we're letting the problems of life drag us down and we're forgetting that God loves us and we're forgetting that God is in control and we're forgetting that we depend upon him for our needs and we're thinking that we need to depend upon ourselves and do it our way, then we will become useless and unfruitful to our God. He cannot use us. He can use us in other ways. He uses everybody, but he cannot use us in a good way to bring about good results. We need to have a life where we just trust in God no matter what is happening and know that God will cause all things to work out for good to those who love him. That is what Joseph in his life has demonstrated to me, is that steadiness, that commitment. And like the apostles, they said, "We will never deny you." And yet they faltered very badly. And Joseph was a person, he was all alone. He was in Egypt. His family, he's separated from him. He's all alone. He's surrounded by idolatry, godlessness, foreigners, and he still maintained his faith. That's an amazing, amazing accomplishment. But it's something that any one of us can do if we have God with us. We can't forget that without God, We are not going to bear fruit. As Jesus said, "I am the vine. If you abide in me, you can bear fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." And that's a kind of a paraphrase. But apart from me, you can do nothing. That's what we have to understand. We have to remain a part of him. Thank you for your attention.
Sing number 669. 669.
Take my life and let it be God's grace.